Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance. And you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
I am the ferryman.
In the shadows of the afterlife, the ferryman of souls guides America's most influential spirits to their eternal rest.
Where are you taking me?
Are you death?
This road is not on any map.
How much for a ticket?
All I ask for in payment is a tale.
I don't know who got to Kennedy first.
And the devastation those first bombs caused.
I've never been to hell, but I know intimately the hymns of the damned.
Binge the season of The Passage now.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hi, everybody. Charles W. Chuck Bryant here, Gen Xer. So this is a pick from our past about Nirvana, because what band is more Gen X than Nirvana? But wait a minute. It's not about the band. That's why it's called Nirvana, colon, not the band. It's about Nirvana, the experience. Again, from August 27th, 2015. Check it out. And this reminds me that one day we should probably do one on Nirvana, the band, because they were great.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. There's Charles W. Chuck Bryant. Jerry's over there. So this is Stuff You Should Know. Here we are now.
Is that your enlightened Buddha mode?
Yes.
I like that. I like that, Josh.
But I did include a Nirvana reference in there. When I said, here we are now.
Oh, did not catch that.
I noticed.
Very nice. Very subtle.
I slid that one in there. Yeah.
Yeah.
How are you doing? Are you feeling centered?
No, I'm all wackadoo.
Your chakras are all over the place?
My chakras are all over the place. So much so that I couldn't think of anything, so all I did was repeat you.
Well, you know, man, I have to say, while we were researching this, I was like, this is some beautiful stuff.
It's very appealing.
Yeah, actually, it's neat stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I became calm in researching this, in researching Nirvana.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
I think this, you can tie this in. We have a couple of related episodes, and we might as well just call this the Enlightenment Suite. How about that?
Sure, I like that.
Karma from July 2011.
Yep.
And Reincarnation from July 2010.
And Burning Man.
The angriest people on the earth.
Yeah, for real.
Yeah, and you know, our buddy in New York, Rachel Grundy, is a Buddhist.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and I've talked to her about it some because I was like, you know, Grundy, I've meditated some and it really appeals to me. And like a true Buddhist, she's like, it's great, man. Here, I'll send you some stuff. No presh.
Nice.
You know?
I'll send you some pamphlets.
Yeah, that's basically what she did. She wasn't like, you know, you should look at this. You know, it's a little less overbearing than other religions I've found.
I gotcha.
You know what I mean?
Now, Rachel Grundy does the literary pub crawl, right? Does she still do that?
I don't know if she still does that.
She used to.
But we can plug her band, Coyote Love. How about that?
There you go.
And she just adopted a dog, so congratulations.
Congratulations to everybody. That's the Buddhist way.
That is. So Nirvana, I thought, was the perfect way to cap off Karma and Reincarnation.
Yeah.
As the third part. And maybe we should do meditation. Maybe we should make it a four-parter.
Yeah, that could probably be interesting. I'm sure there's a lot of studies about the physiological effects of it and all that.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay.
All right.
All right, that's it's agreed upon then.
Yes.
And then the what'd you call it, the what suite?
The Enlightenment Suite.
The Enlightenment Suite. Mm-hmm. Not to be confused with the Transcendentalists.
Or the Enlightenment episode.
Right.
Man.
Which doesn't factor into this at all.
No.
Okay, so, Chuck, we're talking Nirvana.
Yes.
I mean, you have like a conception of it. I have a conception of it. But in researching, one of the things, and I also knew that Buddhists and Hindus share a lot of cosmology.
Oh, I thought you were going to say they hate each other.
No, I don't get that impression.
No, of course not.
But they are – Buddhism is a an offshoot of Hinduism.
Yeah, it's a spinoff. It's the aftermath
it is.
Of religions.
It's the Joni Loves Chachi of religions.
Yeah, that's right.
What else? Maud?
What was that an offshoot of?
Mary Tyler Moore.
Mary Tyler Moore, right.
It's the Jeffersons.
Yeah, from Archie Bunker.
Yep.
Or All in the Family. Absolutely.
Man. I could do this for at least 30 straight minutes.
Yeah, we should do an episode on spinoffs.
Where we just say spinoff names?
Yeah, and just hold thumbs up or down, and but we don't say. People just guess.
Right. What are we doing right now?
Yeah.
It's the Three's Company, spinoff of Hogan's Heroes.
That's good.
Okay, are we done?
Yeah, we're done.
Okay, I did not realize that, I guess is what I'm saying. I knew that they were related. I didn't realize that it was like a direct offshoot where basically—
I don't think I knew either.
The Buddha, whose original name was Siddhartha Gautama. Did you know that?
Actually, Siddhartha.
Okay, so no, the H is silent.
Gautama.
Nice.
Yes, I actually looked at pronunciations or listened to them for this episode for once.
I'm proud of you.
Yeah.
I'm also a little ashamed because you did that and I didn't.
That was all for Grundy.
I was going with the original status quo, which
okay.
is just mangling words of yeah. foreign origin.
Well, I'm trying to mix things up here 15 years in.
And scientific words, too, not just foreign ones.
Right. So, you were talking about Siddhartha Gautama.
Right. He was born into, as a Hindu family.
Sure.
And decided, like, yeah, I'm not too hip on Hindu. I think there's other ways to go. And there's Buddhism.
Yeah, that's the quick version.
Yada, yada, yada. There's Buddhism.
Yeah, this was 5th century B.C. in Asia, of course. And like you said, he would later become the Buddha, which is not to be confused with Buddha.
A Buddha.
Exactly.
Which, you want to be a Buddha? Go do it, Chuck. You can do it.
Well,
you couldn't be the Buddha.
Right.
Because that's Siddhartha's, right?
Yeah.
But you could be a Buddha.
I could be. A layman's version, I believe, right?
Okay.
Because, like, only monks generally achieve the state of a Buddha.
So in researching this, if you wanted to, you could be like, sayonara, life. I'm going to become a Buddhist monk and conceivably achieve nirvana.
Yes.
In this lifetime. You could.
Sure.
Because you're a human being. You're incarnated as a human being into this moral coil. And if you wanted to, you could go do it. But in researching this, yes, apparently it's typically left to the Buddhist monks because they're the ones who are like—
Who have the time.
Sayonara life.
Yeah, because you got to drop out, sort of.
In a lot of ways. Not entirely. I mean, Buddhist monks like still filter amongst the masses and all that.
Sure.
But for the most part— they're focusing a lot more on achieving nirvana than the average day-to-day person does, even like a day-to-day Buddhist or something.
Yeah, it's not a part-time job. You're not like sitting around on Netflix like, should I watch Orange is the New Black or should I meditate for 8 hours?
Right.
You know?
Can I do both?
You can, by the way.
That's called zoning out.
So let's talk a little bit more about Siddhartha's journey. This is 563 BC in modern-day Nepal. Or what would be modern-day Nepal.
Does the Wayback Machine go there?
Yeah, you want to go?
Let's go.
All right.
Sounds like a lovely time.
All right, here we are. It's cold. It's lovely.
You know, it's funny. I didn't take it as cold. I thought we would be going back to, like, maybe spring. But, yeah, it's really cold here right now.
Yeah, it's a good thing you're wearing that ox hide.
Yeah.
You know?
Lined with Sherpa.
So I see Siddhartha over there, and he is a rich dude, and he is a very sheltered dude. And despite all these riches and this lifestyle, he's very pampered. He's kind of – I can see it in his eyes. He is dissatisfied.
He is dissatisfied. He was born into a ruling class, very powerful, like you said, rich family.
Yeah.
And he's part of the idle rich, but he's part of the thinking idle rich. So he started to question his place in life, which is basically what you said, right?
Yeah. He starts to mull this over and, like, maybe there's more. It's a very long story, and we could spend hours talking about this, but—
I'm sure people do.
I've seen a—yeah, because, like, you can't do it part-time, like I said.
All right.
But I'm looking at him, and basically I can tell that his disillusionment has reached its apex, and it is culminated by him looking out the window one day, and he sees three things from his little palace window. He sees a decrepit old man, he sees a diseased man, and then he sees a corpse, and he's done.
So it's like the progression?
I guess so. And he's like, you know what? I'm done with this life. Can't take it anymore, even though I have my arranged wife, my cousin, whom I married, was forced to marry. I have a beautiful son whom I love. I'm going to leave them. I'm going to leave all my possessions, and I'm going to go on a quest, a vision quest, if you will, to understand the true nature of life. And here I go.
Right.
And back we are to the present day, sir. You can hang your ox hide and that Sherpa on the coat rack.
Wait, there's more to this story.
Do we have to go back?
Yeah, we got to go back.
I got on short pants.
Put your pants back on.
All right.
So, Chuck, here we are back again. And Siddhartha, he's gone from a very rich, powerful family. Mm-hmm. He's decided to go on this vision quest. He thinks, well, I mean, if I was very dissatisfied, and I think it's kind of wrong to be as grossly rich as I was, the family I was born into,
yeah,
I'll just go the exact opposite route, and I'll become a hermit.
Yeah.
A completely poverty-stricken hermit who has not even a pot to pee in.
Yeah.
Not even that, nope. Right? And he figures out that as he's starving to death, that it's not leading to any kind of enlightenment. He's actually growing increasingly uncomfortable. It's getting harder and harder for him to pay attention to enlightenment because, say, he's hungry and hungrier.
Sure.
And he realizes, wait a minute, maybe this isn't the right way to go. Maybe polar extremes are a little too extreme.
Yeah, what if I die without achieving my goal? That would just have been a wasted life.
Yeah, I would have been poverty-stricken and great, but that doesn't lead to enlightenment, clearly, so here comes a stranger who's offering me a meal. I'm going to take it. I'm going to be poverty-stricken no longer, and maybe I don't need to be rich, but I also don't need to be poverty-stricken. I need to take this middle road to enlightenment.
So I'm going to kill that stranger, take all the food. Right. No?
With a pigeon hammer?
Oh, wait. That's not the middle road. That's far from the middle road.
That's kind of extreme as well.
I kid.
So he takes a meal from a stranger. He figures out, I think, finally that, like, oh, okay, this is the way to do it. Goes and sits under a tree and achieved nirvana. He achieved omniscience.
Yeah, there were three stages of that. He saw his past lives, all of them. He saw the past lives of all others. And he's like, I'm really starting to catch on to things here. Mm-hmm. Things are revealing themselves. Yeah. And finally, he identified the Four Noble Truths, which we'll talk about in a bit. But those were the three stages under the tree. And in the end of it, he said, you know what? I gained a perfect understanding of the laws governing the cycle of birth and death. Like, it's nirvana. Boom.
It's nirvana. And nirvana, we should probably say, once he achieved nirvana.
He didn't say it's nirvana.
No, he couldn't say much, actually. One of the things that I came across in research time and time again is that he very famously couldn't put it into words, a description of what he experienced in this new state of enlightenment that he was vibing in.
It's like Cthulhu.
Kind of. It was the unnameable, you know?
Yeah.
But everybody trusted him anyway. They said, this guy knows where it's at. We're going to start following his teachings.
Yeah, in Sanskrit, nirvana means to extinguish. So in this case, they're talking about extinguishing suffering and hatred and ignorance. No good.
So we'll talk about the Buddha's path to enlightenment and his teachings that came out of this achievement of nirvana right after this. All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
Hey, I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go, right? There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. On NPR's new podcast, Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's part existential deep dive and part game show. I ask actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to ask some of life's biggest questions. Listen to NPR's Wildcard on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us. Oh,
yeah. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
And we're back. That's pretty funny. Put an ad in the middle of a Buddhism lesson.
Well, we take all comers here, my friend.
Yeah.
So if you achieve nirvana, what you're doing is you are breaking that cycle. If you listen to our reincarnation podcast, the samsara is that cycle of reincarnation that you can be caught in or stuck in, I guess. And this is where karma, and again, we have the great episode on karma. Karma comes into play because what you're doing is you're rewarded on your past actions, mm-hmm. In your current life and earlier lives.
Right.
Does that make sense?
No, it makes sense. Yeah, sure.
So, and I love that this article says it's important to note that the law of karma isn't due to God's judgment over a person's behavior. And it's closer to Newton's law of motion. That makes more sense.
Right. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction.
Yeah.
So when like you step on a snail, you're just like, man, didn't mean to do that. It's going to come back and bite me later on in another life. And you build up this karma or whatever. But when you reach nirvana, you stop accruing bad karma.
That's right. You transcend it.
Yeah. And when you transcend it, then all of a sudden you can spend the rest of your life working off that karmic debt that you have already accrued.
Yeah.
Because that doesn't just go away.
It's like paying down a credit card.
Exactly. So, but it's like when you achieve nirvana, the credit card's cut up. So you're not adding to your account any longer.
Yeah.
But you still have some money that you owe, and you're paying that off in this life or conceivably other lives following. But at some point, your golden ticket has been granted. You have achieved nirvana.
That's right. And when that happens, you have escaped that samsara, and you have achieved parinirvana. And that is the final stage that you find in the afterlife.
Right.
And in the case of Siddhartha, he was 80 years old when he passed, and he died in a state of meditation, basically saying to his people around him, it's all good, man. This is the goal. It was like a great way to pass, you know?
Yeah.
Like we should all pass that way.
Sure. It's telling everybody it's all good?
Yeah, pretty much. Like Wooderson style.
So he's going, all right, all right.
Yeah, those were his last words, if I'm not mistaken.
So when one achieves nirvana and you escape the cycle of samsara, you eventually... when you die and you work off your karmic debt and you're no longer reincarnated, you basically travel to another dimension, another realm,
Yeah.
It's just something different that basically exists outside of space-time, as modern Buddhists would say. And you are kind of one with the universe. You just become a selfless part of the universe.
That sounds beautiful to me.
Sure. It's nice.
So Pada Nirvana Day, or just Nirvana Day, is celebrated on February 15th in East Asia. Celebrations vary, evidently. I looked it up. Apparently some people just meditate. Some people are just reflective. A lot of times in monasteries, food is prepared and shared. But that is February 15th.
Okay. Nirvana Day.
Yeah.
So, Chuck, if you become a Buddhist monk and you achieve nirvana, and let's say you're not a Buddhist monk.
Okay.
And you – no, well, let's say you are.
Okay.
So you're a Buddhist monk.
Man, I keep putting on these clothes and taking them off.
You achieve nirvana. You become a Buddha, right? Not, again, not the Buddha, but a Buddha, like you're, which means an enlightened one, right?
Yes.
And if you say, I have got some time and money, and I'm going to hire you, a Buddha, to lead me to nirvana, you're almost like a junior Buddha. There's a different word for them. They're called arhats.
Arhat is what I found.
Arhat?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's right. That's when you have a Buddha guide to guide you, and you are not, you're enlightened, you're just not omniscient.
Yeah.
Not bad, though.
Yeah, big difference, though. Not sure. Omniscient and omniscient, there's a pretty big difference between those two things, you know?
That's right.
So when the Buddha came back from his once he achieved his enlightened state, he started trying to tell people, like, you can be like this too, and here's how you do it. He said that it's very simple. There are just four noble truths. It's all you need to know until you realize that the fourth noble truth mentions an eightfold path. And then suddenly, it's exponentially more involved. But it's still fairly simple stuff.
Yeah, he taught this for the last 45 years of his life. Number one is that life is suffering. And I think that he was clued into that from his window that day.
Yeah.
It was the suffering that really made him go, like, man, this is life? That old guy? That dead body?
If this is life, who needs enemies?
Oh, good point. Number two, suffering is caused by ignorance of the true nature of the universe. So ignorance is not bliss. Ignorance is no good.
No, and basically the true nature of the universe is that we are made unhappy by wanting, by craving things, and that we can free ourselves from those things by overcoming them.
That's right. That's number three. You can end that suffering. And then number four is... if you attach yourselves and follow the Noble Eightfold Path, not the four.
Right.
Then you're all set. You can overcome all that junk.
It's like, just remember these four things and then these extra eight things.
So the Eightfold Path, the Noble Eightfold Path, are the ideals that guide you along the way, and they're broken down into three divisions.
They're samas.
The divisions are samas?
Oh, no. The individual paths are called... samas.
Oh, gotcha. Well, the first two are under the division of wisdom, right views and right intention.
And it's free. Samas are frequently translated into right here in the West in English.
Sure.
And it doesn't. This article I read by this one guy said, like, that doesn't mean that the opposite of that is wrong.
Right.
It's more right. It's more like right in this sense means complete. Perfect, whole.
Yeah, yeah.
So the opposite of that would be incomplete, imperfect, not whole.
That makes sense.
Rather than wrong.
Right.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah.
The second division is ethical conduct, and under there you have complete or right speech, right action, and right livelihood.
Right. So working for Goldman Sachs or clubbing baby seals, you're going to have trouble achieving nirvana at this. In those positions.
I would say so. Probably not. You're probably not seeking nirvana either.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. So you're fine.
What about podcasters?
Podcasters are totally in there.
We're somewhere between clubbing baby seals and Goldman Sachs. And then finally, concentration is the last division, and that is right effort, right-mindedness, and right contemplation.
Yeah. And the right-mindedness is, you know, being mindful, being aware. Right effort is like you're directing your effort toward these good things.
Yeah.
You're not being slack in your path to enlightenment.
Yeah.
And then the last one, right contemplation, is kind of difficult to understand. At the very least, it's difficult to explain, I found, in researching. But it's basically focusing your entire self on this, on the Eightfold Path and the Four Noble Truths. And
yeah.
Like you're really directing all of your thought and energy into that.
Yeah, and that's what I got from Grundy when I talked to her last time we were up there at the Bell House. It was just very soothing. She's just like, man, it's just practice. You're like, it's a cycle. You're just continually trying to do the right thing.
Gotcha.
And that's like the simplest breakdown. But, you know, if something bad happens and you don't, you start over and you try harder.
Gotcha.
Which is like, sounds like really great life principles.
Yep.
You know?
So that's Buddhist thought as far as achieving nirvana goes. And Hinduism is actually very closely related, but there are some major distinctions. And we will talk all about that right after this.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
Hey, I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go, right? There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. On NPR's new podcast, Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's part existential deep dive and part game show. I ask actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to ask some of life's biggest questions. Listen to NPR's Wildcard on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us. Oh, yeah.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Okay, Chuckers, we're back.
That's right.
Buddhists typically talk about nirvana as nirvana. In Hinduism, it's usually referred to as moksha, but they're basically talking about the same thing. It's the highest plane of existence wherein you stop being reincarnated, you have worked off your karmic debt, and you reunite with the cosmos, with the universe. And in Hindu cosmology, they're talking about Krishna, which is the Godhead, which is the source of all things. And Krishna is very frequently, or Krishna incarnates in three major deities.
Okay.
In all deities, in all Hindu deities are extensions of Krishna, but the big three are Brahma, who's the creator, Vishnu, who's the sustainer,
yeah.
And Shiva, who's the destroyer.
Yeah.
And when you die, when you achieve moksha, you go and get absorbed into Krishna again.
Yeah, and the big difference that I think we found with between Buddha Nirvana and Hindu Nirvana, or Buddhist Nirvana, is that with Hindu, you're working your way up through this caste system.
Eventually, you start out by, you have to be born through every type of organism that exists on the planet. You actually make it through, under Hindu cosmology, 8,400,000 different species of animals before you even get to humanity. And then once you become a human, you can go through countless lives in different castes over and over again. But those castes are hierarchical, and you, yes, like you said, are working your way up.
Yeah, that's called the Varna, and you get that good karma. You perform by performing duties in that caste, and then basically once you have, it's almost like a graduation in the next life if you've done well to the next caste up.
Yeah, and there's a lot of debate right now because Gandhi was famously thrown out of his caste, the Vaishya, I believe. It's the merchant class, and he was thrown out of it because he championed for the rights of the lowest class, the Sudra, who basically were responsible for handling, picking up dead animals and taking care of the rest of the community's waste, and basically were just generally mistreated by the higher castes. And so there's this question now in modern Hinduism, does the caste system still fit? Is it still appropriate?
Right.
But the thing is if it's not a reflection of, say, God's punishment, but something as physical as like the second law of thermodynamics,
yeah,
or motion, sorry, that it's just a reaction to some other action you took in a past life, who are humans to say that the caste system is no longer appropriate? It's just part of the universe.
Yeah.
But then, if it turns out it's a human construct, well, then it gets kind of ticklish, right? Because
sure,
it undermines this Hindu cosmology. So it's a weird place that modern Hinduism is in right now, talking about whether or not to do away with the caste system.
Interesting. What do you think?
I think that's up to Hindus.
Good answer.
Thanks.
So I would imagine then Gandhi then in his next life was definitely in that next caste up, huh?
I would guess if he didn't just achieve moksha right then and there.
Yeah.
He was a pretty good guy.
You're Gandhi. You can skip a few levels.
Exactly.
Skip a few grades.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like the highest class is the Brahmin class in Hinduism, and they're the priestly class. They're like the Hindu or the Buddhist monks who go off and try to achieve nirvana. Their station in life is to achieve moksha. They've worked off their karmic debt to a tremendous degree, and like their focus in life is to get rid of the rest of their karmic life so they are not born again, right?
Right.
The one below that is Kshatriya, and that's the ruling warrior class. That's the one that Siddhartha was born into, apparently.
Gotcha.
When he was like, this is wrong.
Yeah.
Anybody should be able to achieve enlightenment.
Yeah, and that was one of the main reasons that Buddhism was born, right? Was that he rejected that caste system.
The main reason, yes.
Yeah.
But within this, like if you're a Kshatriya, like you're working on your karmic debt because as far as you're concerned, if you can work off enough of it, you will be born the next life into the Brahmin class, and then you can work really hard and get out of that and end up achieving enlightenment. So there is like a hierarchical progression.
Right.
And as you were saying, one of the main things that you're tasked with as a Hindu is dharma, which is responsibility to your caste.
Yeah.
Right? Like acting like a member of your caste rather than, you know, acting out like Gandhi.
I love it. You got anything else?
Yeah. There's actually four tenets, just like the eight. What was it?
The Noble Eightfold Path?
Right. There's like four in Hinduism. One of them is dharma, responsibility to basically your caste, society's rules, but more importantly, like Krishna's rules.
Yeah.
And also like having a responsibility and a duty to your own calling in life.
Yeah.
And just like living like that. Artha is pursuing wealth, because in Hinduism, there's this idea that's like kind of like in Buddhism, where you don't need to be super rich, but you also shouldn't be poor either.
Right.
And one of the things is, just like with Buddhism and Hinduism, you're trying to escape earthly desires and wants. One way to do that is to have the money to not have to worry about where your food's going to come from. frees you up for a lot of time to contemplate and get toward enlightenment, right?
Sure.
That's artha. Kama is more fulfilling desires, frequently like sexual desires, that kind of stuff. But there's all sorts of like taboo and constraint and all that kind of stuff. It's not like a free-for-all in Hinduism as far as sex goes, right?
Right.
And then lastly, there's moksha. Once you have moved past your earthly desires, you become free from delusion and realize that there is no earthly self. There's just your connection to Krishna, and then you can become enlightened.
Which is also called moksha, correct?
Yes.
Nice.
Pretty interesting stuff, huh?
Yeah.
So that's Nirvana.
Not the band.
Not the band. Man, I hope we pointed that out at the beginning of this, or else everybody's really confused right now.
Oh, we'll probably call it something like Nirvana, not the band.
There you go. If you want to know more about Nirvana, not the band, you can type that word into the search bar at howstuffworks.com. Since I said search bar, it's time for listener mail.
And if you want to know more about Nirvana, the band, watch the great documentary, Montage of Heck.
It's not called Nirvana, the band?
Nope, Montage of Heck. Okay. Very well done.
Is it?
Oh, it's great. Depressing. All right, I'm going to call this our biggest fan in Uganda. Hey, guys, my name is Joshua Quisenberry. I'm a huge, possibly the biggest fan of your show, and I listen every chance I get. My wife, son, and I live in Kampala, Uganda, where we run an NGO for children with severe special needs who have been abandoned, orphaned, or abused. On the Nazi sabotage episode, you spoke about the brilliant but poorly executed plan of the Germans to infiltrate the U.S. and cause chaos. I wondered if you guys knew that wasn't an original idea by Hitler, but in fact, during World War I, Kaiser Wilhelm No. 2 had an entire sabotage ring running out of New York City that was responsible for numerous acts of terror, including blowing up or attempting to blow up railroads, bridges, canals from the East Coast all the way to San Francisco and Canada.
Did not know that.
This is during the neutral period, our neutral period of 1914. One of the largest and most devastating was blowing up a munitions depot on New Jersey's Black Tom Island. Apparently the blast was heard all the way in Philly and through shrapnel that actually damaged the arm and torch of Lady Liberty herself.
What? Bring me Kaiser Wilhelm.
Oh, he's dead.
Good.
I just want to kick his body.
What was that?
I just figured that was you with Kaiser Wilhelm.
Is that what I sound like to you?
Yeah. No?
Like I'm drunk and about to throw up?
Some of the other plots that were thankfully discovered were attaching rudder bombs on ships. Another interesting one was trying to buy U.S. passports from dock workers to smuggle more spies in. It was found out and ushered in putting photos on passports.
I think I understand.
I think so, too. So they couldn't be stolen and used anymore. Anyway, I thought you guys would find it fascinating that the Germans, they were a little better at sabotage and would have made a better film in World War I.
Wow.
And that is Josh Quisenberry.
Thanks a lot, Josh. Thanks for the work you're doing out there. Nice.
Heck yeah.
If you want to get in touch with us to let us know more about something we walked right past in a previous episode, we'd love to hear more stuff. You can tweet to us at SYSK Podcast. You can join us on Facebook.com/StuffYouShouldKnow. You can send us an email to StuffPodcast@HowStuffWorks.com. And as always, hang out with us at our home on the web, StuffYouShouldKnow.com.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
I am the ferryman.
In the shadows of the afterlife, the ferryman of souls guides America's most influential spirits to their eternal rest.
Where are you taking me?
Are you death?
This road is not on any map.
How much for a ticket?
All I ask for in payment is a tale.
I don't know who got to Kennedy first.
And the devastation those first bombs caused.
I've never been to hell, but I know intimately the hymns of the damned.
Binge this season of The Passage now.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Summon your anticipation for an all-new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabby Collins. This season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. I sit down with Nicola Coughlan, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix, May 16th. Then, fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes drop starting May 2nd.